Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
They're not going to be fighting each other. They've had it. They've had a big fight, like two kids in a schoolyard. You know, they fight like hell. You can't stop them. Let them fight for about 2-3 minutes. Then it's easier to stop them.
And then daddy has to sometimes use strong language.
You have to use strong language. Every once in a while, you have to use a certain word.
President Trump is back in Washington after the NATO summit, where the NATO chief calls him daddy. The Iranian supreme leader claims victory in a new video message. We'll speak to Professor Joubert Ashkar about Iran, NATO, and Gaza. But first, as Zohran Mamdani's primary victory in New York sends shockwaves through the Democratic establishment, we'll speak to former Labor Secretary Robert Reich about wealth and inequality. The name of his last class, which is also the name of the new documentary about Reich.
I try to be mindful of the world these students are entering. I was talking with some of them recently, and I asked, you're no longer Generation Z. What do you call yourself? What's the generation after Generation Z? What are you? And they, several of them said, we're the last generation.
We look at Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s war on vaccines as the U.S. has withdrawn its pledge to fend Gavi, the world's preeminent international vaccine organization, and RFK's new vaccine committee has its first meeting. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump and senior administration officials are pushing back on a leaked U.S. intelligence report that suggests the U.S. strikes on Iran only set back Iran's nuclear program by a few months. On Wednesday, CIA Director John Ratcliffe and Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard both insisted the strike severely damaged Iran's nuclear program. In response to the leak, the White House has announced plans to limit sharing classified information with Congress. Earlier today, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, issued a new video statement claiming victory over Israel and the U.S. while vowing Iran will never surrender.
First, I would like to congratulate them for victory over the fake regime of the Zionist regime. With all those claims that the Zionist regime were making, they almost were crushed under the blows of the Islamic government.
They were Khamenei's first public comments in over a week. Meanwhile, Iran's parliament has unanimously agreed to suspend all cooperation with the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, following the U.S. and Israeli attacks that killed at least 950 Iranians, according to one count. This is the speaker of the Iranian parliament.
Despite the recent attacks on Iran's nuclear facilities, the International Atomic Energy Agency has not condemned them, not even superficially. It has undermined the agency's international credibility, and for this reason, the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran is suspending its cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency until the security of its nuclear facilities is guaranteed and Iran's peaceful nuclear program will proceed at a faster pace.
In other developments on Iran, Iranian state media reports authorities have arrested more than 700 people accused of having ties with Israel. At least three people were executed on Wednesday for allegedly collaborating with Israel. Officials in Gaza say Israeli forces have killed another 90 Palestinians over the last 24 hours, including dozens waiting near new food distribution centers. Israeli forces have killed over 550 people trying to access food aid over the past 4 weeks. Palestinians have described the aid sites as death traps.
We trusted the occupation soldiers after they told us to take the package. I walked past the tank and picked up the package, and suddenly they started shooting directly at us. The young men were ambushed and fell to the ground. Some were shot in the head, some in the feet.
In other news from Gaza, 7 Israeli soldiers were killed Wednesday when an explosive device was planted on their armored vehicle. It was the deadliest attack on Israeli forces in Gaza in months. Meanwhile, Israel's far-right National Security Minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, is calling on Israel to halt all humanitarian aid into Gaza, despite warnings from the UN that the entire population of Gaza is at risk of famine. In the occupied West Bank, dozens of Israeli settlers attacked the town of Kfar Malek on Wednesday, setting homes and vehicles on fire, an attack that culminated in Israeli soldiers killing 3 Palestinians. Officials in the West Bank said the settlers were acting under the protection of the Israeli army. Meanwhile, Israeli forces fatally shot a 15-year-old Palestinian boy during a raid on Al-Yamun. Meanwhile, President Trump's called for the immediate cancellation of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's corruption trial in Israel, which is set to resume on Monday. In a rambling social media post, Trump condemned the case against Netanyahu as a witch hunt and called for Netanyahu to be pardoned. On Capitol Hill, some Republican senators are continuing to hold up President Trump's budget bill over its proposed deep cuts to Medicaid. According to the Congressional Budget Office, the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill Act would slash Medicaid spending by nearly $800 billion over a decade, eliminating health insurance for some 10 million people. On Wednesday, Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins rejected a proposal to create a $15 billion relief fund for rural hospitals, saying it failed to make up for far greater cuts. Republican Senators Lisa Murkowski and Josh Hawley have also expressed skepticism. Senate Democrats continue to condemn the budget bill. This is Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy.
What this bill represents is the biggest transfer of wealth from the poor and the middle class to the rich in the history of the country.
Shame.
Who's asking for that besides the billionaires and the corporations?
Grassroots groups representing poor and working families rallied on Capitol Hill Wednesday to demand no cuts to essential social programs like Medicaid and SNAP. This is Sarita Russell of the North Carolina activist group Action NC, whose family recently saw monthly food assistance benefits slashed from $440 a month to just $54 a month.
Our churches, which already struggles to keep their food pantries stocked, will be overwhelmed as more families turn to them for help. Our schools will see more children coming to class hungry, unable to focus on learning. Our homelessness population will grow more as families are forced to choose between rent or food. That ain't right.
The Trump administration said Wednesday it would relocate the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, outside of Washington, D.C., and into the headquarters of the National Science Foundation in Alexandria, Virginia. The move will force some 1,800 NSF workers to relocate to new offices. The American Federation of Government Employees condemned the move, writing, quote, NSF employees are being displaced with no plan, no communication, and no respect, unquote. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has withdrawn a U.S. pledge to fund the world's preeminent international vaccine organization as the Trump administration takes its campaign against vaccinations global. RFK Jr. claimed the organization, known as Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, has, quote, ignored the science of vaccinating children. Gavi says it's helped vaccinate more than 1.1 billion children in dozens of lower-income countries, preventing nearly 19 million future deaths. On Wednesday, scientists at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention rallied outside the agency's headquarters in Atlanta to protest the Trump administration's newly reconstituted vaccine advisory panel, which RFK Jr. stacked with unqualified appointees, many of them holding anti-vaccine views. This is Dr. Jody Guest, a professor of epidemiology at Emory University.
Science should serve the public, not politics. That public health is a right, not a luxury. And that people inside the agency must be allowed to do their work freely, transparently, and without fear. The stakes have never been higher. We all know vaccines save lives. Science protects communities, and public health is worth fighting for.
Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with Dr. Paul Offit, director of the Vaccine Education Center, author of numerous books, including Deadly Choices, How the Anti-Vaccine Movement Threatens Us All. In immigration news, the Trump administration's planning to reject refugee status for potentially hundreds of thousands of asylum seekers in the United States, making them immediately deportable as part of Trump's sweeping mass deportation efforts. That's according to CNN, which reports Trump's plan to fast-track deportations is aimed at immigrants who entered the U.S. outside an official port of entry and later applied for asylum. New Jersey Democratic Congresswoman LaMonica McIver pleaded not guilty Wednesday to charges she assaulted an immigration officer during an official visit to a Newark ICE jail last month. The charges stem from a May 9th incident in which Congressmember McIver and two other Democratic representatives sought to tour Delaney Hall, a private prison run by Geo Corporation under contract with ICE. A criminal complaint brought by President Trump's former personal attorney, Alina Habba, who's now serving as an interim federal attorney in New Jersey, accuses Congresswoman McIver of slamming a federal agent with her forearm, forcibly grabbing him and striking another agent. McIver insists she was the one roughed up by federal officers. She spoke to supporters following her arraignment Wednesday at a federal courthouse in Newark.
This is all about political intimidation. The Trump administration and his, him and his colleagues or cronies, whatever you want to call them, have weaponized the federal government. The facts are on our side. No matter what headline they tweet about, no matter what they put on their Twitter, we know that the facts are on my side.
Mayor Ross Baraka of Newark was also charged, but the charges have been dropped against him. The three Congress members were trying to protect him. A former Justice Department lawyer has filed a whistleblower complaint alleging Principal Associate Deputy Attorney General Emil Bovey conspired with other top officials on how to mislead courts about mass deportations and to potentially ignore judges' rulings outright. The complaint was filed by lawyer Erez Rivaini, who was fired in April after he admitted to a judge the Trump administration had mistakenly transferred Maryland father Kilmar Abrego Garcia to El Salvador's mega prison due to a, quote, administrative error. Rivaini filed the complaint ahead of the Senate confirmation hearings Wednesday for Bovey to serve as a judge on the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. This is Bovey under questioning from California Democratic Senator Adam Schiff.
Did you suggest, as Mr. Rivaini wrote, that DOJ would need to consider telling the courts you and ignore any such court order?
I did not suggest that there would be any need to consider ignoring court orders. At the point of that meeting, there were no court orders to discuss.
Well, did you suggest telling the courts in any manner?
I don't recall.
You just don't remember that.
And one of the world's richest men faced a wave of wedding crashers as activists in the canal city of Venice disrupted Jeff Bezos' nuptials this week to protest what they call Bezos' takeover of the famed city. Guests at the multimillion-dollar wedding between Bezos and former TV news anchor Lauren Sanchez include the Clintons, Oprah Winfrey, Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner. On Monday, activists unfurled a giant banner on Venice's San Marco Square, reading, "If you can rent Venice for your wedding, you can pay more tax." This is Simona Abate, a campaigner with Greenpeace Italy.
The problem is not the wedding. The problem is the system. We think that one big billionaire can't rent a city for his pleasure. We think that we need to tax the people that have a huge number of money and use this money for reduce the impact of climate change, to increase the healthcare system, to increase the welfare state.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. In a stunning victory earlier this week, 33-year-old Democratic Socialist Zohran Mamdani won the Democratic primary in the race to be mayor of New York City, sending shockwaves through the Democratic Party across the country. Mamdani was the top choice of 43.5% of Democratic primary voters in New York's ranked choice system. He defeated former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who conceded the race Tuesday night. If Zohran Mamdani wins in the general election in November, he will be the city's youngest mayor in over a century, as well as the first Muslim mayor of New York. He won with an energetic campaign that brought in tens of thousands of volunteers and a laser focus on the issue of affordability.
We have won because New Yorkers have stood up for a city they can afford. Yeah! A city where they can do more than just struggle. One where those who toil in the night can enjoy the fruits of their labor in the day. Where hard work is repaid with a stable life. Where 8 hours on the factory floor or behind the wheel of a cab is enough to pay the mortgage. It is enough to keep the lights on. It is enough to send your kid to school. Where rent-stabilized apartments are actually stabilized. Where buses are fast and free. Where childcare doesn't cost more than CUNY. And where public safety keeps us truly safe.
Just as stunning as Zohran Mamdani's victory is the defeat of the former governor. Andrew Cuomo entered the primary as the easy front-runner, with broad name recognition and the support from the largest super PAC ever in New York City mayoral primary history. The PAC, called Fix the City, shattered all previous records, raising more than $25 million to back Cuomo's attempt at a political comeback, 4 years after he resigned over sexual misconduct allegations by at least 11 women who were former staffers.
How did this earthquake, this massive upset happen? And what does it say about the Democratic Party and Democratic voters in this moment that the campaign of a Democratic socialist focused on affordability beat out such formidable establishment opponent? We're joined now by someone who's made teaching about rising inequality and its impacts on society his life work. Robert Reich has held many positions over his career, Secretary of Labor under President Bill Clinton, best-selling author, prolific creator of viral videos online, and co-founder of Inequality Media. But above all, he considers himself a teacher. He's been a professor for over 40 years. In fact, he just taught his last class, at least for now. Yes, there's a new film out about Robert Reich, which is called Just That, The Last Class. And it looks at this last semester teaching at UC Berkeley, the course Wealth and Poverty, Wealth and Inequality. Here's a clip from the film.
I try to be mindful of the world these students are entering. I was talking with some of them recently, and I asked, you're no longer Generation Z. What do you call yourself? What's the generation after Generation Z? What are you? And they, several of them said, we're the last generation.
The last generation. Robert Reich joins us in our studio here in New York because the film The Last Class is premiering this weekend at the IFC. But you are coming at, to say the least, an extremely significant moment in New York's history, in the country's history. You endorsed Mamdani, you endorse Zohran Mamdani early on. That is certainly more than the Democratic leaders of the city have done. Even after this victory, technically it's in a week because it's ranked choice voting and the results will come out next week. But he got 43% of the vote at a time when, at some point, Andrew Cuomo was something like 40 points ahead. And I think what Mamdani said is his own name recognition was at 1%, and maybe that was an exaggeration, he said. But The name of your class, Wealth and Poverty, very much signifies the significance of this campaign, the very issues he addressed, where right now New York Senator Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, leader of the Democrats in the House, they kind of congratulated him, but they didn't even endorse him at this point. Talk about the shockwaves and what you think this suggests for the future.
Well, shockwaves is a good way of putting it, Amy. The Democratic Party really needs to learn this lesson. It's a lesson that over the last 40 years, it could have learned over and over again. But the lesson is very simple. There is a huge anti-establishment wave in America. That is the most, that's the strongest wave in American politics. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that the bottom 60 to 80% of Americans have not seen a real wage increase in 45 years. You know, people are doing a little bit better than they did 45 years ago, but the people at the top are doing wonderfully well. I mean, they're having weddings in Venice. There's so much conspicuous consumption at the top. Wealth has moved, has been siphoned off, and it's because the economy is rigged. I mean, I hate to say it. This is the one thing that I agree with Donald Trump about. The economy is rigged, but it's rigged against working class people, and I think Mamdani understood that. He understood that people have got to want a change, but also they want affordability. They want an economy that is working for them. And they want new faces. They want younger people. They want a new generation of Democratic leaders.
I mean, one of the features, winning features of Zohran Mamdani's campaign was a series of interviews that he conducted in parts of New York City that had previously voted Democrat, but in this election went Trump. And I think what you're saying, that you know, this is where you agree with Trump, that the economy is rigged, that in part explains why people shifted from the Democratic Party to Trump, the people that Mamdani spoke to. And he came to see, in fact, that the problem was affordability. So if you could elaborate a little bit more on how you think this was the perhaps determining issue in this kind of surge towards Trump and the Republican Party in the last election.
Well, it's clear that Trump fooled the majority of Americans, or at least a plurality, into thinking that he would be their savior. He would be doing something about prices. He would actually be responding to the needs of average working people. Now, he hasn't, obviously. He didn't in his first term. Remember, the major thing he did in his first term was a big tax cut, mostly for the rich. That's what he's doing now. Again, another big tax cut, mostly for the rich. But he uses the symbols of cultural populism, like immigration, to persuade a lot of people that he's on their side. Now, I'm not suggesting Democrats go in that direction. Quite the contrary. I think Democrats need to go in the direction of economic populism. They need to talk about the reality, and that is that wealth and income are really almost at a record level, moving to the top, and it is no accident. This is because of huge amounts of money spent in politics by big corporations and the wealthy. But what's wonderful, and I think Democrats really should take some solace from this, about the Mamdani's campaign, is that you had the biggest war chest in modern American politics against him. You had Bill Clinton endorsing him.
Your boss.
My former boss. Not my boss anymore. And you have the Democratic establishment really making a kind of last-ditch effort to do everything they possibly could for him. And they failed miserably. If there's not a lesson here about people rising, demanding what they want and what they need, and a new generation of Democrats rising, talking to people authentically about what they need, I don't know what the lesson is.
So, I mean, we want to, talk about the fact that you were also, you're saying all of this not as someone who's an outsider, but someone who served in successive Democratic administrations. So we'd like to go back over 30 years and turn to a speech you gave in 1994 at the Democratic Leadership Council when you were still the Secretary of Labor for Bill Clinton.
My friends, we are on the way to becoming a two-tiered society, composed of a few winners and a larger group of Americans left behind, whose anger and whose disillusionment is easily manipulated. Once unbottled, mass resentment can poison the very fabric of society, the moral integrity of a society, replacing ambition with envy, replacing tolerance with hate. Today, the targets of that rage, and we see it around us. You can only read the daily paper. You don't have far to look. Today, the targets of that rage, are immigrants and welfare mothers and government officials and gays and an ill-defined counterculture. But as the middle class continues to erode, who will be the targets tomorrow?
So that's you, Robert Reich, speaking in 1994 when you were still Labor Secretary for Bill Clinton. You've described this moment as your 1994 warning about Trumpism. So if you could elaborate on that, and also when you came to be totally disillusioned with the Democratic Party.
I came to be disillusioned with the Democratic Party years ago, before I was Secretary of Labor. But, you know, Democrats, these parties, these things called political parties are no longer what they used to be. They are basically fundraising machines. Donald Trump has made the Republican Party into not just a cult, but a very dangerous, dictatorial, kind of systemic structure. Let me just say that when I said in 1994 that if inequality continued to widen and the middle class continued to shrink, that we would see a demagogue coming along, what I meant was that we would create the conditions in which a lot of Americans were desperate enough that they would vote for a demagogue. And obviously, Donald Trump did come along. He has fooled a lot of people. He continues to fool a lot of people. He's a con man. We all know he's a con man. But unless the Democrats come up with somebody who's truthful, you know, who has as much or if not more charisma, but is telling people what is actually happening, and talking in realistic terms about the economy and power. You know, the word power is a very important word here, and it's not used nearly enough. But the fact of the matter is that most Americans feel powerless. Most Americans feel that they have lost whatever power they had. And that's why I think they were looking for a strong man. This is a crisis right now. I don't have to tell you. You guys are doing a fabulous job. Thank you for what you're doing. But unless the Democratic Party, and we don't have a third party, we're not going to have a third party very easily, unless the Democratic Party really does respond to the moment, and why can't it? I mean, you have Donald Trump there surrounded by billionaires, supported by billionaires, creating a government by, for, and of billionaires. Why is this not the perfect time for the Democrats to emerge as the party of average working Americans once again?
When you were Labor Secretary, you opposed your own president's welfare reform, what many called welfare deform. Now you have the House Speaker, Johnson, saying that perhaps on Tuesday they're going to vote on the budget bill, what President Trump calls, of course, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Others call the One Deadly Bill Act. You have hundreds of millions of dollars in cuts in Medicaid. You have Democrats tinkering around the edges. But what do you think needs to happen at this point? Zohran Mamdani has said the only answer to organized money is organized people. This is a message you've had for decades.
He's exactly right. And this is a time for people to say, no, in a very mass way. I mean, we see mass demonstrations. That demonstration we had recently was the biggest demonstration we've had in recent American history.
No Kings, 5 million
No Kings,
at least.
That's right.
Marching in the streets.
But, you know, we're not going to tolerate taking money from Medicaid and food stamps and nutrition and possibly from Medicare as well to give a big tax cut to the richest people in America when they've never been as rich. This is not this is not something that any political person, any political advisor should find terribly complicated. It's not something that a Democrat should find complicated. This is giving the Democratic Party a